Hey, all right, getting into the podcast mood here today. Hi, Reggie, how you doing, my friend? Good, good, good. You look like you're comfortable in there. It's nice because you're going to be here for at least an hour, at least. It's supposed to be an hour, but you know me. All right, are you ready? Good, good, good. Get that trigger finger ready and put that in the book. Episode 466. Yes, 466. Okay. 465 was much easier last week. 466. Cool. Okay. On our way to 500. Okay, you ready? Star, smile strong, get the trigger finger ready. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. Don't forget, listening to the podcast is always the principal obligation on a weekly basis. But just as important is to get out there and tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. And what the heck? Why isn't it there? I don't know. They need to know. Spread the word. Spread the word. Your loyalty and devotion are much, much appreciated. And also, of course, if you like what you hear, you can always listen to where we've been in the past on these podcasts by going to WGNRadio.com, going to the podcast section, hitting the prompt for this podcast, and then enjoying a wealth of podcasting treasure. Past Elton Jim podcasts dating back several years. Just scroll down and load more. You've been doing it for a while, folks. This is episode 466. So, a lot's happened since the last time we spoke, wouldn't you say? Certainly on a worldwide basis. We are currently in a, what would you call it? We are currently in a environment, I don't know, a condition of sede vacante. What the hell are you talking about, Jim? Sede vacante. I haven't heard that much on TV or radio in covering, of course, the, I guess, not so surprising, yet surprising passing of Pope Francis, who died on April 21st, just hours after he had appeared throughout St. Peter's Square in Rome, outside of the Vatican, to celebrate Easter Sunday. And within several hours, early Monday morning on Easter Monday, yes, there is a thing called Easter Monday. In the Catholic faith, for those of you who are not Roman Catholic, you know, Easter, well, throughout Christianity, Easter, pretty big deal, wouldn't you say? yeah, considering that it's a commemoration of when a person rose from the dead, which in all of mankind has not been done too often. So kind of a an important event, according to the doctrine and the faith of of Christianity. So yeah, that's a celebration that I think holds a little high esteem within the Christian world. But yeah, in the Christian faith, there's a Holy Thursday, there's Good Friday, there's Easter Vigil Saturday, and then of course Easter Sunday. It's a big deal. I always feel though that Easter gets the short end of the stick, because Christmas is such a huge, huge holiday. And yet, when you look at the realities of what we're celebrating, Christmas is the birth, the supposed, you know, the Christian faith birth date of Jesus, even though historically, I mean, it's pretty much accepted at this point that December 25th was not the date that Jesus was born. And I don't want to get into the realities of religion or your faith or anything here. Even though I'm talking about the Pope today, I'm not doing a commercial for Catholicism. I've told you many times. Even though I was born and raised a Catholic, and I went to 12 years of Catholic grammar school and high school, and I was an altar boy and very active in the church, listen to the way I'm mumbling here. Sorry, big guy. I am not a practicing Catholic, but I certainly was schooled in it and surrounded by it through most of my childhood and development days up through high school. And so I certainly, and was involved. And so I certainly have a great knowledge of it and still a respect for it, as I do for many religions. I have been to Israel and Jerusalem, and I am interested in the Catholic faith, in the Jewish faith. When I went to college, I took a couple of theology classes in order to learn about different religions and learn about, having been raised a Catholic. I don't know how the other Christian religions are, but Catholicism was very isolated, at least when I was growing up. Today we are exposed to so much, but, 30, 40 years ago, it was pretty easy to be insulated if you wanted to. There weren't many platforms or many outlets that were around to be exposed to things. You could find information, but it wasn't as easy as it is today, a couple of keystrokes. And so within, at least in my upbringing in the Catholic religion, we were very isolated, and we were told, and we obviously could observe there were other religions out there, but we really weren't given a lot of information about them. In fact, I remember when I was a young kid, and especially having been an altar boy, I think I started in fifth or sixth grade, and because of that, I was serving a lot of masses, and I'm listening to the mass now on a regular basis, a weekly basis. Sometimes I would serve during the week as well, 5 days a week, before school. So I was going to a lot of masses, and then we had religion classes in our regular curriculum, obviously going to Catholic grammar school and Catholic high school. And I remember as a young kid, early on, I couldn't figure out why all the stories were centered around Israel. And we were hearing about Israel and the Israelites and Jewish, and no one even told us early on in our learning. It wasn't really emphasized that Jesus was Jewish. It was mentioned. I mean, obviously, he was known, as he was crucified because he was the king of the Jews, supposedly, at least according to the Pharisees, who who were threatened by him and his revolutionary and rebellious message, going against what the strict teachings of the Jewish religion were at the time. But even that was kind of downplayed. And I remember one time, I can close my eyes right now and see myself like in fourth or fifth grade, raising my hand in religion class and saying, "Well, why is there so much reference to the Israelites? The songs we sang, Oh come, Emmanuel, and ransom captive Israel, that mourns in lonely exile here until the Son of God appear." I mean, I haven't been to church in decades. I still remember that from when but we're talking about the Israelites, Israel, Emmanuel. I said, "Well, why, if we're Catholic, why are we talking about Israel all the time?" And then finally, I don't know if my question sort of forced the issue or not. You know me. I'm like, "Hey, I've been inquisitive since I came out." I came out of the womb here. You know, it's like, what? Why is that? I've always asked why, how, or why, or what? You know, the five W's there. You know, and so it was. I think our teacher said, "Well, Jesus was Jewish." And I remember being kind of confused. So in other words, we're not Jewish, but we are praising a Jewish person. And there's still kind of an incongruity there, don't you think? And as you get older, you start to see how religions and stories begin to overlap, and it's an interesting, and that's why I said in college I took a couple of theology classes, because even though I wasn't a practicing Catholic anymore, I was still, because having been raised, I became intrigued by religion and theology as a subject, not so much as a spiritual thing, but as a historical thing. I'm a big history buff. And, you know, obviously religion is history as much as it is spiritual and faith-based. It's also historical. And so that's what intrigued me. And so, as I said, I've done not extensive research. I don't have extensive, knowledge on all different religions in the world, but I have gravitated to some, just to get a sense of, okay, well, where are these all coming from? And where are the overlaps? And what does that mean in the grand scheme of things? So as I said, today, this podcast is certainly going to be talking about the Pope, and really what I want to talk about is not just Pope Francis. I mean, obviously he passed away. But I'm looking forward to the conclave. Let's conclave, folks. So, yeah, but like I said, I think this is more of a cultural type of event. We're seeing the news. I mean, whether you're Catholic or not, and the Pope is still a world figure. And because there's almost a billion and a half Roman Catholics, and the Pope is the head of the Catholic Church, he certainly automatically is given some gravitas. Certainly in the last 30 or 40 years, the Catholic religion has had a less of a tight grip on it, both its followers as well as the world, as the world in many ways has become a little more secular, but also the Catholic Church has really been hurt and rocked by a horrific sex scandal that has pervaded the church for going back 50 or 60 years at least. And I think that's only because that's how far back we have people alive today. But this whole idea of the sex scandal of the priests and with young children, both male and female, in many cases, the church has really struggled on how to handle this. And they have not done a good job. For the most part, the Catholic Church and the Vatican was used to being very isolated and unquestioned, not only by its followers, but by anyone else. There was almost a monarchy, if you will. It was a very closed and secretive bureaucracy, and still is to many ways. You hear a word in the next couple of weeks about the Vatican Curia. The Curia, you'll hear that. That's basically the bureaucracy of the Vatican, the bureaucracy of the Roman Catholic Church, believe it or not. You know, we're hearing about so much about bureaucracies today and the shrinking the size of government with the Elon Musk and Doge. Well, I have news for you. The United States is not the only bloated government. The Vatican and the Catholic Church's administration has been pretty bloated and scandaled in many ways, aside from the sex scandal, a lot of financial things. It with like any big business, and even though certainly to call the Catholic religion a business, I'm not being disrespectful. There is certainly a spiritual side to the religion. There's no question about that. And it was founded on that. But because of its huge number of people and its wealth, because of donations, because of the work that it does to help in its mission, there is a huge financial side. And you cannot deny that, whether you're a faithful Catholic or not, there is a spiritual and religious side to the Catholic Church. And then there is a very real business part. And many of the popes have struggled in being able to oversee both of those. In any big institution, once again, I've said this so many times, human beings of any kind, of all kind, are flawed. And even though somebody may be an ordained priest or an ordained minister in any religion, they are still humans first. And their flaws and their weaknesses can be revealed. And over the centuries, the Catholic Church has been filled with different kinds of scandals. The popes, the men who have risen to the position of pope, started as clergymen, talking about the faith, spreading the faith, dealing with people, helping people. And then suddenly they're thrust into this role. And not only are they supposed to be the shepherds, but they're supposed to be businessmen. They don't know anything about that. And so there's a lot of things that go into the whole business, if you will, of the Vatican. It's its own country. Did you know that? The Vatican is its own country. So, yeah. Within Rome, the Vatican itself is a country. So there's a lot of interesting aspects to all religions. And the Catholic faith has certainly been scrutinized and criticized because of, once again, its size alone gives it great influence, gives it great importance, and thus also opens it up to criticism. Some criticism unfairly leveled against it, and then some criticism quite fairly leveled against it. And as I said, this sex scandal has riddled the church now for at least 20 some years, and the church has still not fully grasped the devastation and the importance. And I only hope that the new pope, as difficult as it may be, this has gone on too long with this kind of laissez-faire attitude. And I think that if the Catholic faith and the Catholic Church wants to really redefine itself and in some way bring people back to the church and gain a little more of the respect that it used to have on the world stage, not only amongst the faithful, but amongst the world itself, it has to seriously and transparently deal with this scandal that still pervades the ranks with its priests. And it has destroyed many lives, and in the process, it has really destroyed people's faith. And as we know in today's world, my goodness, whatever faith you are, Christian, Muslim, Jewish, whatever it may be, Hindu, whatever you may be, today's world, we could use a little faith. and something to unite us. If it's not faith, it's optimism that which too many people religion organized religions bring. But certainly, wow, it was both not shocking and shocking when the news came. I remember I woke up at about 3 o'clock in the morning, and I just happened to have my phone with me, and I was kind of a little awake. And I just checked my phone to see what was going on. And I, at about 3:30 Chicago time, 3:30 a.m., I saw this news. And I think it had only been announced shortly before that. So I was amongst one of the first probably to have been at that up at that time and happened to check my phone. And I saw the news that said Pope Francis is dead. And I had just watched the footage of him, you know, 12 hours earlier, out on the balcony, outside of the Vatican, outside of St. Peter's, and then, of course, driving around the square, greeting people. He certainly didn't look good. There's no question about that. But to think that 12 hours or so after that, maybe a few more, he had apparently a major stroke that put him into a coma and basically killed him. He had a 12-year papacy. He was 88 years old. And then we obviously know that he had been sick in February for over a month in the hospital. So this was not a surprise. It sounds like he was very near death when he was in the hospital. He did rally back, but apparently within, maybe just over a month since leaving the hospital, he passed away. Which, of course, now leads us to upcoming the conclave. Now, I got to tell you, I like a good conclave. I always have. the first conclave that I remember hearing about, happened in 1978. When I was born, and most of my early life in the Catholic Church, there was a pope named Pope Paul. And he was the Pope, and then he passed away in 1978, and that's when Pope John Paul I took over and was voted in as Pope. And that was the first time that I remember being aware of this voting of a Pope and all the different rituals and traditions that go into it. And as I said, you know, I mean, some people have a very negative view of any kind of organized religion, and I appreciate that. But I think there's also something interesting about tradition. And once again, that's a part of history, and which I like. And there's no question that the election of a pope is steeped in rules and tradition that goes back centuries. And in today's world, as I said, and I talked about this a few weeks ago, about shared memories, shared moments. We have so few shared memories or shared moments about big events because we are off into our own little worlds. We are distracted and attracted to all different things. There's so many different formats. There's so many different options out there. The world used to be much smaller, and now it's much bigger in terms of our options to get information, to be entertained, to occupy ourselves, to learn, whatever you may call it. And so there are not as many shared events or shared moments, collective memories, that we all are at the same place at the same time. And but interestingly, one of those events, aside from the Super Bowl, and things like that, when I think about it right now, I've talked about this before, when you think about it, it's like, really? There used to be several of these, the big award shows, the Academy Awards, other sporting events like the World Series and things like that. But now, really, you know, certain television shows back in the 90s, The Sopranos, back in the 70s, All in the Family, and the whole CBS Saturday night comedy lineup, if you will, soap operas. There used to be a lot more communal events that people would all experience together, shared together, and then could talk about together, experience together, if not in person through television or radio or other things, but then could share their experience or their opinions or their perspectives on that event with other people. But now we're so fragmented that we don't. I think the Super Bowl was really the only thing that really brings people together for a few hours for one event. Not even New Year's Eve much anymore. It just seems like it's the Super Bowl. But whether you're religious or not, I do believe, and the conclave is going to be happening sometime within the next week or so. As I record this, they haven't given the official date yet, but it's certainly going to be sometime in early May, based on, once again, the traditions. It has to be held to, there has to be an election for a new pope, I think, within 15 to 20 days after his passing. And that's why I started the podcast by saying that we are currently in a condition of sede vacante, which means the vacant seat. Right now, there is no pope. It's as if there's no president. We have, say in the United States, we have a vice president. So if the president dies within minutes or seconds, the government has a leader. You saw that, we all have seen that famous photo of Lyndon Johnson on the plane in Dallas taking the oath of office with Jackie Kennedy right next to him, on the same plane where John F. Kennedy's body was somewhere in the cargo being flown to Washington. We have a quick transfer of power. But right now, the Catholic Church is sede vacante, vacant seat. There is no pope. There is no vice pope. There's no pope that takes over if the pope passes away. Obviously, the pope's job is for life. But we don't have, there's no vice pope. So there has to be an election. But right now, there's the mourning time that goes on after the pope's death, the funeral, and then, of course, this thing called the papal conclave, when the voting cardinals, who are of a certain level within the church, are the voting body. They would be kind of like the Congress, if you will, or maybe even more like the Electoral College would be the conclave of cardinals who will be voting for the new cardinal or for the new pope. And as I said, if you strip away, you can't strip away the religious aspects of this conclave. Okay, I understand that. It's a vote for the next leader of the Catholic Church. So yeah, there's a definite religious aspect to this. But I also think there's an interesting cultural and historical aspect to it because it is so steeped in tradition. And it will follow these rules. And this conclave is going to be covered because of the way our media is covered today. This conclave will be covered on almost a 24-hour basis. Once it convenes, and I believe there's maybe 135 cardinals that will be convening on to Rome in the next week or a couple of days, whatever the day is, from all over the world. 135 cardinals will be, I think that's the last number that I heard, will be eligible to vote. You cannot be over 80. If you're a cardinal and you're over 80, sorry, you can't vote. You have to have been under 80 when the Pope dies. So if you turned 80 on Good Friday and then the Pope died on Easter Monday, sorry, too bad. Can't vote, even if you were a cardinal. On the other side, if your birthday was on the Tuesday after Easter, then you were still 79. But this, there's a whole process to this. And of course, it's very ironic that just last year, there's a film called Conclave. I mean, sometimes life, is so random that you say, how did this happen? Now, there's been conclaves for centuries. Why would it have been that just 6 or 7 months ago, there is a movie out called Conclave? It's not even a word that a lot of people know. I mean, if you're in the Catholic faith, you know it. But to the majority of people, they probably don't even know what the word meant or what the movie was even about. And because it seemed to have a Catholic bent, I'm sure a lot of people in other religions weren't even interested. But now, from what I understand, because the Pope dying and there's going to be a conclave, the streaming of the film Conclave has gone up 280%. So now suddenly people are like, hey, what's going on? And I think that's great. This, I think, aside from the religious aspects, you might be from a different religion. You may hate the Pope. You may hate Catholics. That doesn't matter to me. I'm not really talking about religious here. I'm talking about a historical kind of event that I do believe could actually be a uniting shared event, a shared memory. Now you might say, well, who cares who the next Pope is? Well, I understand that. But there are so few events. I mean, a lot of people weren't happy about it, but now that I'm thinking about it, yeah, we have the Super Bowl as this communal event that everybody's interested in. And then we have a presidential election where maybe, and I don't even know how many people that day were glued to their set. I certainly am always. I'm into politics, so I certainly am. But I don't know if even that is a shared moment or a shared communal experience like it used to be. I'm not sure anymore. I know the Super Bowl is. But I think that if you have something of an open mind, whatever you know, feelings you may have about if you're not Catholic, there is this event happening. It is going to be on the news. It is going to get major coverage. It is a current event. Yes, there's a religious aspect to it, but you can if you're not interested in that, you can kind of peel that away and just look at it for what it is. There's a lot of intrigue into this. It's an election. We're always into elections, aren't we? Basically, that's what this is. And as much as people didn't want to talk about who might be the next pope because they wanted to show respect to Pope Francis after he passed away, now it's a horse race. The mourning is over with now, and we're talking just like we're talking about handicapping the upcoming Kentucky Derby. Who are the top contenders? This is going to be covered. It's going to be a major event, and there's drama to it. You know, there's pageantry to it. There's a lot of things that can appeal to you, even if you don't believe in the faith, you don't believe in the leader or whatever it is, but you could still, I think, appreciate the custom, the tradition. All these cardinals from around the world are converging on Rome. They're going to be sequestered to vote in the beautiful Sistine Chapel, painted by one of the greatest artists of all time, Michelangelo. They'll be parading in these regal red vestments, all very pious, very thoughtful. There are rules, there are regulations, there are do's, there are don'ts. There's drama in that there's the way that they announce a new pope is not through a press release. It's by using an ancient device that was the only way centuries ago, before we had press releases and news wires and anything, smoke out of a chimney. That's the way the new pope is officially announced. It's not through a press conference. It's not through a press release. It's not about a news report. It is done the same way it's been done for centuries, with smoke coming out of a chimney. I think you have to at least find that kind of cool, that in this high-tech world, we still cling to, in certain areas of our culture, centuries-old traditions. So I think there's something to that. The dark smoke means that the popes have voted. There has to be a two-thirds majority a two-third majority of the cardinals have to vote for one person, and that's the way that the new pope is elected. It's a secret ballot. Each cardinal doesn't know who they're voting for, at least when they wrote it down. I would urge you to not only watch Conclave if you can, but I feel sorry for Ron Howard, the director and the former Opie star of Andy Griffith, and certainly and Richie Cunningham from Happy Days, because about 10 or 15 years ago, maybe even longer than that now when I think about it, maybe even 20, he made a film called Angels and Demons, which was based on a book by Dave Brown, who wrote the classic bestseller, The Da Vinci Code. Angels and Demons was written before The Da Vinci Code, and it dealt with the conclave. So even before this film, which was called Conclave, the inner workings of how a pope was elected was shown in great detail in Angels and Demons. So you might, you know, before the conclave begins, I would urge you to see the film Conclave if you can stream it, or I would think that somewhere, either on your cable system, if you still have a cable system, or somewhere on a streaming service, the film Angels and Demons. You'll see the back, you'll see some of the behind the scenes. Even, I mean, Ron Howard does a really cool thing, shows the black smoke going through the tube out the chimney. It's a pretty cool special effect. And if you really remember, even before that, back in the early 90s, The Godfather Part 3 had a subplot about the Vatican and the Pope. And it was somewhat based on some conspiracy theories that still float around. That, as I mentioned earlier, Pope John Paul, who was elected in 1978 after Pope Paul died, he was only pope for about a month, and then he died of a heart attack. He was hardly in, and that's when, and then there was another conclave, and that's when John Paul II from Poland was elected pope, and he was pope for 27 years. So there was a lot of intrigue in the early 90s, or in the late 70s and early 80s, centered around the popes. There were three popes within 3 years, really, or 2 years. It was pretty wild. There were three popes within a year. I mean, that's crazy. Usually popes, it's a job for life. There were three popes probably within a couple of months. And then, of course, it went for 27 years, and that's when John Paul II passed away, and then Pope Benedict was elected. And then there was more intrigue about 15 years ago, or 12 years ago, when Pope Benedict resigned. First pope in 600 years to resign, which then created another conclave, which then led to the election of Pope Francis. And now we will have another conclave. And so I think that there really is a chance here to use this as a way to maybe unite and to have a shared collective memory or a shared collective moment. There's no telling when a new pope will be elected. Once the conclave start, I believe there's two votes a day. And they vote, and then if there's no two-thirds majority, then they go back, and then there's electioneering that goes on. Once again, this is a human exercise. Yes, in spiritual talk, the idea is that the Holy Spirit is enlightening those cardinals and is moving them to elect this person that God wants as the next pope. That's the spiritual, faithful side of this. But from a purely realistic, non-religious thing, this is an election for a new leader, and electioneering does go on, and that's part of the process. And many times people, the saying is that somebody walks into the conclave a cardinal and walks out a pope, because most likely the person that they elect is one of those 130, will be one of those 135 cardinals. Now, interesting fact, once again, from historical standpoint, forget about the religious aspect. I'm trying to be as secular on this as possible, because I really do believe that I would hope to maybe interest any non-Catholics to say, well, maybe I'll look into this. It sounds kind of interesting, just from a historical standpoint. even though most likely the next pope will be amongst those cardinals who are voting in that sequestered conclave, it doesn't have to be. It doesn't even have to be a priest. I think you have to be baptized. But you don't have to be a cardinal. Now, obviously, once again, politics and familiarity and nepotism and all those things that take place in our society take place here too. That's what's so interesting about it. There's a religious veneer to this. Obviously, there's a religious overarching purpose to this conclave. But then amidst it, it can't help but have human intrigue, backstage, behind-the-scenes intrigue. And so for the same reason that people royal watch, well, this is kind of its own royal thing. And once again, I know a lot of people are turned off by those kinds of things. I get that. But from a historical standpoint, maybe you can put aside some of those biases and sort of get into it. As I said, I'm not a practicing Catholic, but I'm looking forward to this. Because I just think it's an interesting historical moment. I'm a news junkie. There's things about this, you know, news leaks. Who's the contender? What's going on? There's all these different, you know, rituals and rules to this thing. You know, as I said, two votes a day. They're sequestered. After the first day they don't elect a pope, then they're sequestered in a building right next to the Sistine Chapel. They can't talk to anybody, no outside. In today's world, you know, before it was no newspapers. It's very much like a jury, but they can have no cell phones, no outside distractions. You know, once again, from the religious or spiritual side, the whole idea is that the Holy Spirit is enlightening these people to vote in a certain way. So yeah, there's a religious aspect, but there's also a human aspect. As I said, there's all these little moments of drama as well. It's really an election, and all the same kinds of things that go on in any election go on with this. It might not be as obvious to the outside world, but that stuff's going on. And this is all going to be televised. And we don't know when. You might be watching a TV show within the next couple of weeks, and all of a sudden, they're going to cut in to your TV show and say, a new pope has been elected. Or what they may say is, Habemus Papam. Habemus Papam. We have a pope. Right now, we are in sede vacante, but when they elect a pope, before he walks out on the balcony at St. Peter's, he will be introduced, and the phrase will be, Habemus Papam, we have a pope. So there's all this intrigue, there's this tradition, there's this pomp and circumstance. St. Peter's will be filled with people sitting there looking at that chimney. I remember this. I haven't been a practicing Catholic for decades, and I'm not proud of that. I'm just telling you the truth. But I do remember back in the early 80s when CNN was just beginning to take hold and cable television was beginning to become widespread, and CNN was becoming this, you know, was launched as this 24-hour-a-day news operation. I know that's hard for some people to understand, that there was a time when there wasn't a 24-hour news station, but it's true. We used to only have three networks. There was no cable television. I'm old enough to know that there was a time when TV stations used to shut off. I know that sounds crazy to you. if you're of a certain age. But there was a time when TV stations literally shut off and went off the air until 5 or 6 in the morning. Now, in my lifetime, there weren't many of them, but there were a couple small stations that still did that. I know that sounds like dinosaur times, but it wasn't that long ago. I'm not that old. So I know that might be crazy for you to think, but I remember. So when the idea of CNN came, when Ted Turner launched the CNN broadcasting network on cable, and the idea that there would be a 24-hour news thing, this was huge. They're never going to go off the air. You're going to get, there's no such thing as waiting till tomorrow morning to find out what happened. You're going to find out when it happened. That was a revolutionary shift in our culture, in the world's culture. It really was. And I don't even know if we appreciate what a shift that was. We used to wait until after the 10 o'clock news was done, until we got the newspaper the next day at 5 or 6 in the morning to find out what happened overnight. We didn't know. There was just a news blackout, and we were happy with that. We were able to live without knowing any news happening from 10 o'clock till 5 in the morning. There was no Facebooks. You didn't know what was happening. All you knew what was happening in your house. You really had no knowledge of what was happening around you, in your neighborhood, in your city, or in your world. I know that sounds crazy today because we have such access to information constantly and right in our hands. Like I said, I woke up at 3 in the morning and there was my phone. And that's how I learned that the Pope was passed, that the Pope died. I wouldn't have known that until I woke up, like most people did. But I saw it at 3 in the morning or 3:30. When it was announced, by luck, but I had the access to do it. 45 years ago, that didn't exist. And I remember, once again, not that I'm, as I said, I haven't practiced, I've been a practicing Catholic for many decades. But being a news junkie, when I heard about this CNN thing, the first thing that I thought of as to why this CNN would be cool, why the idea of a 24-hour news network would be cool. Now, for me, being a news junkie, someone who wanted to get involved in the media, obviously I had an interest in it. But the idea of it, the concept of a 24-hour news operation, meaning that now whenever something happened, you would learn about it. Because there would be coverage of it when it happened. Not, you wouldn't wait anymore. And I swear, the first thing I thought of was, well, now, you know what? With this 24-hour news, when the Pope dies, they can have a little, you know, picture-in-picture in the corner of their newscast, just with a camera aimed at the chimney 24 hours a day. So that when the Pope dies and there's a conclave, we never know when the smoke's going to come up. It's not like they say, oh, there's a 12 o'clock vote and a 3 o'clock vote. That doesn't happen. People are sitting in the St. Peter's Square. There's the chimney that comes outside of the Sistine Chapel. Nobody knows when the votes start, when the next one, when it ended, when the next one will start. All they do is they look at that chimney. And if dark smoke comes out, a new pope has not been elected. And if white smoke comes out, habemus papam, and the bells ring. The white smoke and the bells. We have a pope. So I said, wow, it's going to be cool about this. Talk about something that we never had the ability to see. We're going to see this live now. Because usually, even if they would cut into the news, like, oh, a new pope has been elected, well, you know, you don't see the, you don't see when the smoke first comes out. You see a tape of it, most likely. But now, thanks to access that a 24-hour news service, CNN, was going to provide to us, always reporting on the news whenever it happens, I'm like, hey, they could just aim a camera at the Sistine Chapel chimney, and we could see the smoke, whether it's black or white, whether we have a pope or we don't. Habemus papum or not. That's the first thing I thought of when CNN was, how cool will it be? We'll get to see the Sistine Chapel chimney. That's where my head was. So yeah, I'm into the conclave. I love the pageantry. Hey, I'm an Anglophile. I like to watch, all the coronations and all the things with the royal family in England. I watch the presidential inauguration. As I said, I like history, and that's a part of history. And so is this conclave. Even if you can strip away the religious aspect of it if you're not Catholic, and still view it as a historical event that's filled with tradition and intrigue and pomp and circumstance. And at the end of the day, an election and a winner, if you will. Just like the Kentucky Derby, just like the Super Bowl, there'll be a winner. The new Pope is the winner. He won the election. And so I'm not trying to be, sacrilegious here. I think I'm actually, hopefully, trying to get people that maybe would not even think about watching or being interested in this conclave from a religious aspect to just still pay attention, because it's going to be a major world and major news event. And I always joked, because, as I said, when I grew up, going to Catholic grammar school for 8 years, 4 years of high school. And when I was in grammar school, as I said, I was an altar boy. I used to read at the masses. I was very involved with the church as a young kid. And I always thought that perhaps, the parish looked and said, hey, you know, maybe this guy could be a priest. You know, he seems to be interested, and he's talking at the masses, and he's serving mass, and he seems to know a lot about it, and he seems to be involved and interested. They took us, when we were in eighth grade, they took all the boys to a high school seminary at the time called Quigley here in Chicago, in the hopes that, because, you know, a lot of times there was a lot of guys would go to a Catholic high school seminary, and by age 14, they already were dedicated to becoming a priest. They went to a high school in the expectation that they would that they would be schooled within a religious bent, and then they would go to a seminary after high school and become a priest. So many times, the Catholic Church was recruiting young priests right out of grammar school, and so I always joked that, you know, if I had become a priest, I think that I probably would have been a cardinal. And so I'm looking, I think I would have been in Rome, probably working somewhere at the Vatican. And I probably along the way, I'm sure I would have become a cardinal. And so now I think about it, this, if that was the case, this would have been, let's say I became a cardinal, let's say I graduated college in the mid 80s. So let's say I would have become a cardinal by, you know, the mid 90s. So this, let's see, we had a conclave after John Paul died, and then we had, so this would, I would, if I would have been, a, I, this would have been my third conclave. I would have been at the conclave that elected Benedict, And then I would have been at the conclave that elected Francis. And now this would have been my third conclave. Yeah, no, I don't have a high opinion of myself, folks. No. But I have to tell you, though, being a media personality, whatever you want to call it, and an actor, I do like, the priests, there's a religious aspect. And of course, from the Catholic side, you know, there's the celibacy, that celibacy thing, which, you know, sort of got in the way from my standpoint. But, I always loved, I'm an actor. I love a good costume. And those priests get to wear some pretty cool stuff. You know, the cardinals get to wear the little red little beanie things and those nice red robes and the black black and red. I look really good in black and red. They're the Blackhawk colors, the Chicago Blackhawk colors. I've always liked black and red anyway. The vestments at the church, those big, you know, the white and the greens and the purples. Oh, you know, and the hats, the big Pope hat, even the bishop hat with the little things on the side. The priests have some really cool costumes. So there was an aspect to that that was very appealing to me. Believe me, there were aspects that weren't, which led me on a different course. But yeah, I think if I would become a priest, this would have probably been my third conclave. But as I said, within the next week or so, all of this is going to transpire. It's going to happen. And so I just wanted to give you a little preview of this, not from a religious standpoint, but from more of a secular side, that even though this tradition, obviously steeped in religious and spiritual meaning, but it also can have a historic and secular interest as well. And it will be very interesting to see who does become the next pope, because the role of the pope has changed so much, even in my lifetime, and certainly over the centuries. But even in my lifetime, before I was aware, there was a pope that was very popular, and unlike many of the popes in history, and even in recent history, who were very isolated. They were almost aloof, if you will. There was this sense of a very, of almost like a royalty, if you will. But there was a pope just before I was born, who passed away just before I was born, named Pope John the 23rd. And he was an integral pope. Now, you have to understand, those of us in the last 30 or 40 years, especially, as I said before, with this sex scandal that has just rocked the Catholic Church and has really made the church come under some great scrutiny, some great question. A lot of people have left the church. They may have kept their faith, but they've left the church. They've been disappointed not only in the institution and the scandal itself, but then the way the church leadership has failed to seriously and confidently and judiciously dealt with this, the consequences of this, and those people that have done these terrible things. And so the Catholic Church does not, even though they can still claim perhaps that there's 1.3 billion Catholics in the world, maybe that's true, maybe that's not, I don't know. But there's no question that the spiritual hold of the Catholic Church is not as strong as it once was, say, 50, 60, 70 years ago. For instance, in 1960, right? Okay, that's 65 years ago. Yes, to some people that may sound like it's a long time, but it really isn't in this grand scope of history. Just 65 years ago, John F. Kennedy was running for president, And one of the main drawbacks to his candidacy was that he was Catholic. Many people in this country, and that's why I've said throughout this podcast, I've been trying to say, look, I'm not trying to offend you. If you're not Catholic, you may be Christian, you may be any other religion, and you may disdain the Catholic Church, or you may not even care about it. It may not even be on your radar screen. But at that time, the Catholic Church had a great presence and a great hold. Its faithful were faithful. There was a strong religious bent in this country, certainly, and throughout the world. And so that gave the Pope not only religious power, but in some cases, political power. Because in theory, the Pope had over a billion people that followed him and listened to him. One of the things about the Pope is, not in all decisions, but in questions and matters of faith, the Catholic faith believes that the Pope is infallible because he is enlightened by God. So what he says about faith matters, he can make they cannot be questioned. It's coming from the Pope. Now, secular matters, that's a whole different subject. But there were a lot of people were questioning whether John F. Kennedy could or should be elected president, because many people were afraid that John F. Kennedy would be taking orders from the Pope on how to run this country, because he was Catholic and the Pope was his leader, if you will. That's how strong religion was, and people's view of religion and the way people viewed religion's hold on people. You know, Joe Biden was Catholic, or is Catholic. There was never a mention in the election in 2020 about his religion. We knew he was Catholic, but it wasn't brought up as something as to why not elect him. But John F. Kennedy became the first Catholic president. And that was a huge question of whether people would vote for him, especially if they were non-Catholic, because they were so afraid that, and he was questioned about this at press conferences all the time. This was not just some little conspiracy theory that was being whispered. This was a legitimate campaign issue. And what a difference 60 years makes. Most people didn't even know, perhaps, that Joe Biden was Catholic. It didn't even come up in the 2020 election. Didn't even come up when he was vice president under Barack Obama. But in 1960, it did. So the Pope has always been a political figure. In many ways, centuries ago, the Pope was more of a political figure than even a religious figure, because of the stranglehold, if you will, or at least the hold that religion and the place that religion played in centuries ago in people's lives. It was a core. It was central to people's lives. And so obviously the leader of a movement that had so many believers had power over the centuries, and certainly over the last 50 or 60 years, that has changed. And I think today, when you look at the Pope, he's more of an ambassador, not only for the Catholic faith, but for religion in general, in this secular, growing secular world, and in this world where there's a lot of divisiveness and evil. The Pope's role now, while it was always very Catholic centric and always will be, but still the leader of more than a billion people, he's more of a ambassador, not only for the Catholic faith, but for religion, or at least a spirituality in general, as a lot of our society falls away and becomes more secular. So it will be interesting to see who the next pope is. You know, Francis was viewed as a very liberal, progressive pope, much different than Benedict, who was much more dogmatic and much more conservative, as well as John Paul II. As much as he was known as the people's pope, which I find interesting is that I think we have a very short memory in this world and in this country. John Paul II really redefined the papacy. As I said before, there was John the 23rd, and he was one of the first popes to humanize the papacy and take some of the pomp and circumstance off and try to make religion more relatable. He brought the Catholic Church into the modern era. He established something called Vatican II, which radically shifted many of the traditions of the church to make them more open to modern society. Before the 60s, masses were still said in Latin. In the 50s and into the 60s, they were still said in Latin. But thanks to Vatican II, suddenly the masses were said in native languages so people could relate to them. Nobody spoke Latin, but that was the tradition. So John the 23rd was instrumental in bringing a modern view to the church after years of it being very rigid and very dogmatic and steeped in an isolated history and tradition. And then John Paul II built upon what John the 23rd did. And he went out amongst the people. He went into St. Peter's Square. He opened the Vatican up. He was a former actor when he was a young man before he became a priest, so he was a performer. He got it. And as I said, his papacy took place just as media began to expand. And he knew how to play to the camera, and he was good at PR. But I'm not saying that he was a phony. I'm just saying is that he understood the role and the need to get the word out in a new world was to do it through these new forms of media and these new forms and formats of communication throughout the world. And John Paul became the people's pope. Now, they've been calling Francis the people's pope. And to a certain extent, I understand why they're doing it, but there should be a mention of the fact that the person who really defined the papacy was John Paul II. Francis emulated, in many ways, in terms of the human connection, what John Paul had done. But they were two very different. John Paul, for all of his charisma, and people loved this guy, and they were attracted to him, and he drew millions of people wherever he would go. He did a tour of the United States, and here in Chicago, there were a million people in Grant Park for a church, for a mass that he told, or that he celebrated. He had great charisma. He had great popularity. But at the same time, he was very conservative in his views on the issues that still divide people, like abortion and birth control and other things like that, and women in the priesthood. And sadly, when the sex scandal broke, it was under John Paul's tenure. And he was very old by that time and not in good health. But he did not really address the issue when it started, and it just began to snowball. And here we are, I think he passed away in 2005. 20 years later, the Catholic Church is still grappling with this sex scandal that broke during John Paul's tenure. And it still has not been handled the way it should be. And hopefully the new pope will do that. But it will be interesting to see the new pope, because Francis was considered a very progressive pope, even though he didn't change the dogmatic aspects of the church, like, say, women's and priesthood acceptance of abortion, other things like that. You know, gays, divorced people. He did make comments that expanded the liturgy, even though he didn't change the rules in many ways. He didn't change the dogmatic rules, but he changed his perspective. And even that, for many people, was an enlightenment and a refreshing change. But many people within the Catholic Church felt that he went too far. It was almost like people viewed him as the woke pope, if you will. And so in today's world, and don't forget, he took over in 2013 when Barack Obama was president. There was a much more progressive mood in this country, United States, as well as around the world. And so Francis's message was well received in that atmosphere. This more progressive, open-minded, questioning, less dogmatic view was welcome during that time. But in 2025, things have changed. There's a strong movement against the woke perspective. And so it'll be interesting to see if people within the church, these 135 cardinals, will they believe that while they certainly respected the Pope and what he did, but now the Pope is gone. The Pope is dead. Long live the Pope. One Pope is gone. New one comes in. Will these cardinals either elect someone who will continue Francis's more progressive view and vision of the Catholic faith and its place in the world, or will they retract a little, and like much of the world has, in terms of pulling away from the progressive movement that has been so strong over the last 5, 6, 7, or 8, 10 years, and say, no, we need to get back to more traditional values? And will they elect a pope who has a little more of a conservative or a little more traditional view of the role of the Catholic faith and the role of faith in the world today? This is a very interesting conclave. As I said, we're talking about a world leader here in many ways, certainly not with the same power or influence that a pope once had. There's no question about that. But still, a leader of more than 1.5 billion people, that's a lot. And so there is some influence there. So we're talking about this, the election of this pope can reflect where we are as a culture, regardless of your religious background. So that's another reason, I think, why you should pay attention to this, even if you're not Catholic. But one way or the other, folks, we got a conclave coming. Right now, we are in sede vacante. But within a week or so, I hope you're watching CNN. I hope you're watching Fox. I hope you're watching MSNBC, whichever network you watch. I guarantee you, you will see a picture-in-picture in the corner of that set aimed at that chimney. You're going to see white smoke come out of there, and you are going to hear the words, and I hope you think of me when you hear them. Habemus Papam. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget to tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 466. I'm Jim Tirano. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of my mind to your ears. Habemus Papam.